Great. Well, thank you, Dick. It's a real pleasure to be here. And thanks, everybody, for coming this morning. There are two handouts. One is simply a copy of the slides, which should be pretty clear in and of their own. And also the second one part is what we're going to get to at the end about the global, and that is the interfaith approach to advancing family planning internationally. So just to telegraph a bit of what this is about, this is a success story from Afghanistan. Now, on family planning. So if that doesn't take your breath away, we won't stop there. We're going to move to how this is going to go global with a broad constituency of interfaith advocates for family planning. This is a project that I had the pleasure of working on in Afghanistan, supported by the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation, through Management Sciences for Health and funded by the Hewlett Foundation. It was indeed building on the large REACH project, which stands for Rural Expansion of Afghanistan's Community Health Program. So this was building upon a health program that was fairly comprehensive, but very much organized. Focused on the rural areas. Afghanistan is a country that is about the parallel of Denver. It gets a lot of snow, so getting around in the winter time can be a little difficult, and it is quite pretty. This is one of the project areas which doesn't get very much snow. It's fairly close to Kabul. The mountains in the far, the Hindu Kush, that get a lot more, where women don't get around for about 4 to 6 months when the snow is 3-4 feet deep. As Dick alluded to, there is a fairly high maternal mortality rate in Afghanistan, one of the highest in the world at the time this project started. I've advanced this, but it's taking a little bit of time.
Mm-hmm. Why don't you do this here?
There we go. Okay. Maternal mortality ratio was 1,600, according to the CDC studies at the time, virtually one of the highest, together with a total fertility rate of 6.7 births per thousand, births per lifetime, leads to a woman having about a 1 in 7 chance of dying from pregnancy in her lifetime. So of these 14 girls here on this slide, about 2 would be expected to die from pregnancy-related problems. And the contraceptive prevalence rate, the CPR, depending on which data you looked at, was only about 5 to 10%. Leading one of my colleagues, an Afghan OBGYN, to say, you know, the fastest, cheapest, easiest way to reduce maternal deaths is with contraception in this context. However, saying that and getting to, okay, how do you do that after 23 years of warfare, when both the infrastructure of clinics and facilities is gone, and the health personnel, no one's been trained for 23 years, and those who had been trained often left. So the impetus was to build upon this large REACH project, USAID funded, that covered about a third of the country of Afghanistan, to reduce maternal deaths, and particularly to help identify some elements of success to make it work better in the Afghan context, and being consistent with this large program and the government's initiatives around it. And also then to move on to see how to advocate for improved contraceptive use, and through religious leaders. Religious leaders, mullahs, imams, are not only important in their own right as religious leaders, but they are also community leaders as well, very often. One of the innovations was injectable contraceptives given in the community, and particularly initiating them by community health workers. They had previously been only allowed to give repeat injections, which didn't make a lot of sense in many ways, but that was where things stood. So we got permission for the first time to have them initiate them. But to do these kinds of initiatives, You also want to make sure the community is with you if you're going to do something new, different, that hasn't ever been done before. So working with the community in terms of, is this okay? Is it all right with you? It hasn't been done before. Everybody should know that. But here's what our plan is, and it's built on a solid international evidence base. What turned out to be particularly critical was essential contraceptive guidance that was provided for all households, and that providers would receive the same kind of information to overcome the rampant misconceptions, which were very condom, very, I'm getting to the next point here, which are very common. Condom too. Condoms also were a problem, and illustrations were difficult. We often heard not only from people in the village, but also from providers, well, we wouldn't give injectable contraceptives unless a woman was at least 35 years of age and had 4 children or more, because they cause infertility. Well, they'd gone through the basic training that we had would provided, and they were still in that position. So it was not too surprising that husbands said, well, we don't really want another child right now, but we don't want our wives to be sterile, so we of course wouldn't use these things. And a lot of fears around health effects as well. So basic information and updating actually became much more important than the cultural, religious barriers that we had presumed would be the main obstacles in these areas. So I'm going to move fairly quickly through this because rather than detail a lot about the project, because I want to get to where this leads us in terms of a global sense of things. Some of the issues that I'm sure Malcolm Potts would address if he were here is the important evidence that adequate birth spacing is really important for child health as well as mother's health, and that works at the community level. And it works for religious leaders and husbands as well. So waiting at least 2 years before trying to get pregnant again, and the requirement for at least 18 months of contraceptive use in order to achieve that, and also to achieve adequate breastfeeding through that period. It turns out that teaching that we now comes from WHO and USAID and the rest of us is very consistent with teachings from the Holy Quran. And this one mullah explained to me, he was a Pashtun mullah, that the Prophet Muhammad, you know, realized the importance of birth spacing 1,400 years before we came up with this nice scientific evidence that I was explaining to him carefully through a translator of how important this was. And I remember sitting with him on the floor, as I am in this photo, a little bit dumbfounded, not quite knowing what to say. So I said, well, yes, I guess the Prophet Muhammad did know that. Peace be upon him. So this was an example of how we worked. This is the fellow on the far left is, in fact, that particular astute mullah, who was also an important community leader, who also then helped not only with the community maps that we were assessing here about contraceptive use and how the community health workers were doing it, but he also taught men and the community about family planning at Friday prayers. So injectables being provided by both women, and in some cases men. This dignified fellow here in the lower panel is in fact a mullah and a teacher and a community health worker. These are the results we got in a short period of time. The bar that goes from 16 to 26 is the contraceptive prevalence increase over 2 years achieved by the REACH project in about a third of the country. So that's the big project. And that was really substantial. 10 CPR points in 2 years in Afghanistan was a big surprise to everybody. And an even bigger surprise to us in the three project areas that started out at 9, 20, and 24 percent CPR, went going up to 34, 44, and 51. A rapid increase and a substantial increase over and above what was already being achieved in the large comprehensive project. So we had the strong feeling we were doing some things right. And this was verified through independent visits to households to determine the accuracy of that data. So just, you know, pointing out where the religious leaders come into this picture. Approving innovations, the 37 mullahs in these areas of about 3,700 population, three areas, 3,700 women, excuse me. Some weren't quite sure about this, but with discussion, none of them objected and many of them approved. And connecting it with what was understood to be good and important spacing of children was fit well in this community. Some of them even advocated for contraceptive use on national television. This was not in our game plan. It's great to have a foundation-funded project where you can be a little bit flexible and say, we weren't expecting to go on national television with contraceptive messages. And my dear colleague, Nika Saidi, who deserves a lot of credit for this, said, well, I think it'll be okay, and nobody's ever done anything like this, so why don't we? So I said, okay. And since we didn't need to ask USAID, it worked. In addition, then, the Minister of Health found the results that I just showed you, and he said, this is terrific, and announced it on national television himself. The Ministry of Health also declared it a best practice that they wanted to scale up nationally in terms of particularly community health workers giving the first injection. They also had pills and condoms that they could be provided, but this led to then the change that's now the national practice. And injectables, as you might guess, are one of the leading ones and one of the greatest causes of the sharp increase over and above the CPR that was there before. We got this published in the WHO bulletin. It was picked up by the Associated Press, so that resulted in some interviews with BBC, The World, and about 33,000 hits on Internet Google after the Associated Press disseminated it. So we were fairly pleased and very surprised. No one was more surprised than we were with the kind of results and the uptake of that and the fact that it's had a fairly useful input in terms of the national program. I should emphasize, too, that this wasn't a standalone family planning initiative. It was part of the more comprehensive rural health-based program, and that was really key in terms of acceptance there. And these were Afghan NGOs serving these large communities that had been without a lot of the basic health services for a very long time, and there was a high level of trust in terms of part of that. Now I'd like to move to the next section. Okay, so these religious leaders were helpful. Some of you know that I also work with Christian Connections for International Health, and some of my colleagues, Mona Bormet and others, are here. We were invited to work with an interfaith group, Muhammadiyah from Indonesia, a Muslim organization that has a mere 33 million members in it, and the German Foundation for World Population, to see if we could pull together a consensus on an interfaith approach to family planning that might help move things along. And from that came what we call, fondly, the Nairobi Declaration, which is at the back and looks like this, a fairly simple statement, that these individuals who you're seeing here gathered in Nairobi, Muslim, Christian, Hindu, Buddhist, from principally Asia and Africa, who drafted that consensus statement. And here is one of the key points, that they are now moving the agenda themselves and urging their governments to move the agenda, as well as the donor community. This is fairly different from what we have seen and perceived in the past. There's often a fairly big gap between where the faith community is and where the international community is on family planning and how they see each other as part of the solution or part of the problem. So now over 200 organizations have endorsed this. I'll be leaving tomorrow for the International Family Planning Conference, where Malcolm Potts is headed tomorrow, where there'll be a panel on the new Faith to Action Committee. in this network that's now being formed. A couple of highlights in the context of this language. Family health and well-being. It turns out that there's trigger words in the international community, as there are here, on what's okay and not okay, what's good and not good, as we know how our elected representatives discuss issues of family planning and contraception at the highest levels. And those sometimes can be a little bit more difficult to deal with than mullahs in Afghanistan. So of course, when it comes to the U.S. Congress, Mona Bormet is our key lead person there who takes care of the difficult problems with Congress on helping educate them. But the notion of family health and well-being works across faiths and across cultures better as a part of a more comprehensive health program, and happily maternal health, reproductive health, child health coming together also fits with what faith-based groups are doing. As we also consider the new Family Planning 2020 initiative with Gates Foundation, USAID, UNFPA, the UK government, and a host of other large partners to reach an additional 120 million women with contraception by 2020, the faith community is going to play a very important part in that. And working with them consistent with their faith, the final point there, is a key part of that, and learning how to do that well, to be allies and advocates rather than sometimes standing in the way. And if you don't think this will work, in Africa, about 90% of people indicate that religion for them is very important when given a choice of, you know, modestly important, not important at all, or very important. 88-90%. And they demonstrate that by participation in their own faith at least once a week and with their meager resources. So as the FP 2020 initiative gets underway, as it's going to be doing in a couple of days in Addis and moving forward, as it has been for the last couple of years, country ownership is key, and the faith communities being part of that country ownership will be absolutely critical. So as we see, how does this connect with mullahs in Afghanistan? Well, the same kinds of issues that we learned at the local level that were important in their faith and for their own family's well-being and their economic well-being, as well as their health, fits with where the international community is going. So we're looking forward to moving this agenda and seeing how it's going to play out on a much larger global level, and we'll see how that's going in the next few days. Thank you.
Thank you, Douglas. You know, if you can do it in Afghanistan, it can be done anywhere. This is perhaps the most challenging country to work on, and what Dr. Huber did not share is the estimate that one-third of all maternal mortality would be done away with if we could provide effective and available contraception worldwide, a very important agenda item for us. I'm going to ask us to hold the questions for the presenters until the end of the meeting. We should have at least 15 minutes or so to address many of the questions that you may have. And I'm going to turn the podium over to my dear colleague, Dr. Pat Hibbard, from Harvard. Pat is a leader in the global health arena, and it's been a pleasure working with her. And she's going to be addressing something as simple as the air that we breathe, in this case, during pregnancy. Pat.